session number 7252, Reel 1.
Colonel Osborne, Reel 1. Where were you born?
I was born at Kingston-on-Thames on the 28th of July, 1917.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was at that time serving with the Wiltshire Regiment in the Balkan campaign at Salonika. And he was killed right at the end of 1917, so I never knew him.
So he was a regular army officer?
No, he wasn't. He was a wartime soldier. He had been ranching in British Columbia and came over to England to join up. And my mother and family never went back there after the war.
Where were you educated?
I was educated in Switzerland to begin with at a place called Chillon College, which was hard up against the Chateau de Chillon. And then at the age of 15, we all came back to England, and I went to Cranbrook School in Kent. And from there, I took the examination and passed into Sandhurst.
Now, can we go straight on to East Africa, and can you tell me how you got your posting to East Africa?
Yes. I began the war with the 1st Battalion of the West Yorkshire Regiment in India. And at the outbreak of war, I was made the ADC to the commanding general who took over the 1st Indian Expeditionary Force to Egypt, which subsequently became the 4th Indian Division. This was at the end of 1939. In the early spring of 1940, the general was posted to England, and I was there for a spare file. And after serving on the staff in a very lowly capacity in 4th Indian Division, I managed to get a transfer to the 2nd Battalion of the West Yorkshire Regiment, which then had moved from Palestine down to Khartoum. And sometime soon after, the 5th Indian Division, less its British battalions, came over from India, and we were picked up, as it were, and joined 9th Indian Infantry Brigade.
What were your impressions of the Sudan when you first got there?
My immediate impression was how extraordinarily efficient and clean it was after India. By which I mean that the trains and so on were extraordinarily clean and modern. In fact, the whole administration was very impressive. I liked the Sudanese enormously. And apart from sandstorms, which arose from time to time, the climate really wasn't unpleasant. But at last, we were not in Khartoum long enough, really, for me to get to know the country. Because, of course, the Italians declared war on us, as you know, and I suppose it was August, September, when they did their first raid on Khartoum itself.
So, can you remember approximately how long you were in Khartoum?
Yes, we were about 6 months.
And what type of duties did you have there?
Really, we were virtually a peacetime garrison. We occupied the South Barracks, Khartoum, and apart from normal training, it was virtually a peacetime affair. Of course, when the Italians declared war on us, or came into the war, then we were put on a war footing, which meant that we provided guards for various depots and so on, and indeed the airfield. And the battalion was bloodied, if that's the right expression, and the first air raid that the Italians made when they came in using their normal civilian airliners, which used to go from Rome to Asmara. And they came in with full navigation lights on, and I regret to say it took us completely by surprise.
Can you describe the air raid in
much
detail?
Yes, I happened to be the duty officer at that night, and I remember waking up at about 1 o'clock in the morning with appalling bangs and crashes, and I went outside onto the veranda where the duty bugler was sleeping, and he was, like most Yorkshiremen, was still asleep. I got him up, and he sounded the alarm on the bugle at various vantage points in the barracks, roused the battalion, and we all stood to. But the whole air raid was over within about 10 minutes, and mercifully there were very few casualties.
What type of damage was done?
They hit the runway, but only superficially. I think one of the hangars was destroyed, and I believe there were two killed of the permanent airport staff. As far as the battalion is concerned, we had one soldier who had a piece of shrapnel in his knee, but that was the sum total of it.
Now, can you tell me what type of opinion you and your brother officers had about the British chances against the Italians before hostilities started?
Yes. Of course, we were somewhat confused and certainly lacked a great deal of information. There was little known about the actual strength of the garrisons, of the Italian garrisons, both in Abyssinia and Eritrea. Because, in fact, of course, it had never really been visualized that we would be, as it were, involved in operations against them. And so a great many plans, I think, had to be brought out of the cupboard and dust blown off it. And it really, as far as we were concerned, we didn't take the thing really frightfully seriously. We imagined that, in fact, probably what would happen was that we would be eventually withdrawn from the Sudan altogether into the Western Desert, because that's where the focus of attention was, really. And in fact, as I say, we were more than surprised when suddenly we were given orders to assemble at Kassala, and which we did. And then, of course, we realized all too quickly that how serious the whole thing was.
Was there any questioning as to the necessity for a campaign in East Africa?
I think not. What I think you should remember is that the cooperation between the Sudan administration, the British administration, and the Italian administration of their East African empire was very close and on very intimate terms. The Duke of Aosta, who I subsequently met, was a very impressive man by any standards. He's very tall, very distinguished looking, talked perfect English. In fact, I think was educated in England. And his relationship with the Governor General of the Sudan was of the closest. So therefore, that permeated down, really. And even when the air raid took place, and under somewhat sort of bogus conditions, even then we really weren't all that irritated. And strangely enough, this sort of feeling towards the Italians really continued almost throughout the campaign. I know it sounds extraordinary, but this is really true. We really never did take the Italians terribly seriously.
What about the estimation of them as a fighting force?
This, again, it was difficult to tell. We realized, of course, that they had mostly native troops officered by Italians, and I think the consensus of opinion was that obviously the Italian conscripts, I mean the natives, would fight like tigers, but probably the Italian officers wouldn't put up a very good show. And in effect, that's virtually what happened.
Did you... What about their... the equipment which they had in comparison with yours?
Well, of course, at that time, we had no idea what to expect. When we did get into operations, of course, we realised that, in fact, their equipment was very poor.
Now, once hostilities started, where did you move to from Khartoum?
We assembled in Kassala, which was really virtually on the Sudan, Eritrean, or Abyssinian border. And after, I can't quite remember, but I rather think that we only had something literally a few weeks there, when we did a lot of training. We were then moved up. Partly, some of us marched and some were embused to a place called Gadarif, which was yet nearer the frontier, was incidentally the centre of the cotton-growing area, and as far as we were concerned, it was a very good move because it was the first bit of greenery we'd seen for nearly a year. In other words, we were getting out of the desert by then into virtually the rising uplands of Abyssinia.
What type of training, in what ways did the training differ from the type of training you would have had in Europe?
Well, to start with, of course, we, as a battalion, and because we hadn't been in the main theatre of operations, we were kept very short of transport. And therefore, when we were in Khartoum, there was a limited training with actually transport. So that was one of the bits of training that we had to concentrate on, was in busing and debussing and the whole business of operating with transport. Other than that, of course, when we realised we would, in point of fact, be taking over a part of the line against the Italians, we then obviously concentrated on patrolling both day and night, which incidentally paid off in due course.
In what way?
Well, because the way what we discovered was that the Italians, in fact, were very chary of patrolling and didn't really either understand the art or possibly weren't prepared to do it, and certainly at night. So we really had virtually a free rein.
Can you describe in detail how the patrols were conducted?
Well, perhaps I'd better go a stage further, and I'm now talking about a month later when we had moved up into the line at Galabat, the south of Galabat, which literally was a frontier town. And Galabat itself was, I think I'm right in saying, just inside Abyssinia. As far as I know, it was held by something like a brigade of Italians. And they had the particular area that we were interested in was known as Three Bumps. And these were three low hills occupied by the Italians to the east of the dried-up river Atbara. Now, it fell to my lot as company commander, commanding A company, to, in fact, carry out the first action of the war as far as the West Yorkshires were concerned. And this was a daylight raid in company strength on one of these bumps. Now, leading up to this, of course, we had spent about 2 weeks actively patrolling, mostly by night, but also by day. And this was only possible because although the Italians had complete vision over a vast area, the elephant grass was such that it was so thick and so tall that provided you moved slowly, you were virtually concealed. It did, of course, have problems as far as keeping direction was concerned. I mean, it was so thick, it was almost like sort of moving in a fog. However, we managed to carry out this raid, and it was highly successful. We did it at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, deliberately, because, again, our patrols had found out that the Italians, even the front-line soldiers, carried out the afternoon siesta, we really did catch them with their in their underpants, and it was considered to be really a very successful operation. I think we could kill something like 10 of the enemy. I mean, there they were left on the ground, and the rest just fled, and we sustained, I can't really remember now, but I think we had about 3 wounded, but we got them all back. I mean, there was no problem, and they all survived. But I think success was entirely due to the fact that we had actually patrolled. Perhaps I might add a little example here of what one was up against. To start with, I mentioned the River Aspera. Well, of course, at that time of year, it was dried up, and there were just a series of pools. And I didn't realize until after we'd started using it, we were sharing it, both with the Italians, because who were, in fact, using a pool further up, but their soap suds used to come down into ours. But more than that, in our own particular pool, we shared it with the family of hippopotamus, about 4 or 5 of them. The terrain itself was, the countryside was fascinating because it in fact is part, or was part, of a game reserve. And obviously no one had been shooting there for some considerable time, so the game were there in considerable numbers. And I used to allow the soldiers to shoot for the pot to supplement their rations, and we used to feed on guinea fowl, and in fact we lived very well, and it was that whole period was, looking back, was the most excellent training, because not only did we have could we actual train, but we could then put it to the test immediately by carrying out these raids on the Italian lines. So you had a little bit of active service as well, so morale was absolutely sky high.
In the raid, did you capture any prisoners or take any equipment?
Captured no prisoners, but we brought back quite a lot of their equipment, and this is when we discovered how antiquated it was. We got some wireless sets, some heliograph, which we were using in those days too, and we of course captured a number of rifles, and even some mortars. And the only thing that we were really interested in, because we hadn't been told about it before, was a little bright red grenade. It was about half the size of a Mills grenade. And to be perfectly honest, when we were trying them out, we considered them almost like toys, because they had... they could be thrown, of course, twice as far as the Mills, because they were so light, but their explosive power was limited. What we little realized, of course, was the trouble they were going to give us later on at Kerin.
We'll come on to that later.
Yeah.
But how was it that you didn't take any prisoners?
Because we, unfortunately, I told you that there was this thick, very tall elephant grass, and we of course were supported, had some artillery support, and it was arranged that we would get up to a certain point, and then the artillery, our supporting artillery, would bring down a concentration actually onto the Italian position. Well, in fact, unfortunately, and I don't blame them, because, as I say, the visibility, it was very difficult really to gauge it. It was brought down a little bit too far to the west. In other words, it was nearer us. And this obviously set fire to the elephant grass. And by the time we'd got through the flame and the smoke, they had had time to go. We saw them. I mean, all we do was to fire after them. We saw them disappearing in the ring. But it was a fairly thick country. I mean, not only was elephant grass, but there were some a forest of trees, which I don't know the name, but they were known as the blood tree there. They were a very soft bark, and as soon as you cut into it, The sap absolutely flowed out, and it was the colour of blood.
What happened next?
Then, of course, after that raid, the Italians then abandoned. There was an outpost position, and they then foreclosed onto Gallabat itself. And a brigade attack was eventually mounted on Gallabat, and Gallabat was captured. I didn't take part in that attack, and I really don't know too much about it as a result. I was in reserve.
Did any West Yorkshires take part in it?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, indeed.
What happened next as far as you personally
and that was concerned? And that was entirely successful. Gallabat was captured. A number of prisoners were taken on that occasion. Quite a few. And we did actually suffer a few casualties, quite a few casualties ourselves. But we pursued the enemy, and we were pursuing them up the road to Wani and Gondar. And advanced units of the battalion got as far as Wani, and then we were ordered to stand fast, and we were then told that we were going to, which indeed we were, be replaced by another brigade, and we were to concentrate back at Kassler in preparation for joining the main front at Carron.
What happened next, then?
Well, we withdrew from Gallabat. It was a case, because of the shortage of transport, some of the battalion had to march, which my company was one, and some went by transport. It was a 100-mile march, which we did in 4 days. It was over 100, in fact. It was a forced march, in fact, and I elected to do it by night, obviously to avoid the heat. And I'm glad to say that not one man fell out. By then we were very fit, and this was an all-regular battalion, of course, so that we were really, I think, a pretty efficient outfit.
Was there any Italian harassment on the way?
A little. But only really reconnaissance, because of course at night they couldn't see us. I mean, although it was moonlight, the dust didn't show up. But there was a certain amount, yes, but nothing untoward. The aeroplanes they used were called the Caproni, which was a very slow moving bomber, and you could actually see the pilot, or rather the crew, lobbing the bombs out of the machine.
Did you have any air support?
Yes, we did, but only for a very short time at the actual taking of Gallabat, the Gallabat battle. And as far as I remember, it was just one flight, or I think three aircraft. It could have been a squadron, but I think it was only a flight of Gloucesters. And again, I'm not sure, but I suspect were from the Rhodesian squadron. Which, more of that later on when we come to Carron.
Did you see much of the local population?
There was no population there at all. It's a very sparsely populated part of the world. It was, and I believe still is. And Gallabat, of course, had been, again, was only a small town, had been completely evacuated by the Italians. So we literally saw not one solitary soul, but a lot of animals.
What type of animals?
Well, apart from the hippopotamus and the pools, there were an enormous number of gazelle, of course. And the thing that used to, sounds rather strange perhaps, but used to worry our patrols, were an enormous number of baboons who used to follow our patrol. And used to ape what they were doing. I mean, they really did. The patrols would halt for the patrol commander to check the compass or whatever it might be. And the party of baboons behind, but they would halt too. And they were perfectly friendly. They weren't a hazard in any way.
So you made this forced march up to the Italian positions at Caen, did you?
No, we concentrated back at Cassola, and then we were trained to a place called Sabderat, which my guess is was about perhaps 20 miles inside the Eritrean border. And there we were told to remain for possibly a fortnight, maximum 3 weeks. It turned out to be something in between, to train intensively on mountain warfare. And we detrained, I well remember now, we detrained in the middle of the morning in Sabderat, and we then had to march 20 miles in the heat of the day along a hot and very dusty wadi, dried riverbed. And I must say, it taxed even our resources, fit though we were. And we arrived in a camping area at the foot of a mountain, which I really can't remember the name of it now. But anyway, it dominated the countryside. And it was about, I suppose, about 3,000 or 4,000 feet, certainly no more. But this was to prove possibly the greatest boon, not only to ourselves, but also to almost virtually the entire operation later on, because it completely mirrored the sort of problem that we were going to face later on. And we used to have to go... We first of all, for the first week, we did nothing but climb up and down this mountain by day and night. 3 times by day and twice by night. It nearly killed us, but and I doubt if we could have done it if we hadn't been very fit. With varying loads on our backs to test how much we in fact could carry. And it was then, of course, that we then tried out various techniques about making a rifle company into porters. That to say, they would be divested of all their equipment, their weapons, and they literally would be just porters to carry a maximum load on their backs. Also, we, of course, attempted to, in fact we did, we tried out various methods of getting heavy weapons up to the top, particularly that comes to mind the boys' anti-tank rifle, which was a not a very effective anti-tank weapon. It had a long barrel, it was a very awkward load, it was quite heavy, and I'm glad to say that that didn't last very long, but we had to, with any anti-tank weapon we had, and there was a tank threat, and so we had to use it. We also had artillery battery, which was going to support us anyway later on, and they produced a troop, again to put down fire, to test out how near we could get to a barrage in that sort of terrain. Because, of course, as it turned out, one of the problems there is always is observation. And although one thinks it very easy, that if you can see people clambering up the hill, especially with yellow, as we did, or orange pieces of cloth on our back to identify us, nevertheless, although a hill appears to be completely bare and featureless. In fact, of course, it has many indentations and crevasses and so on, and it's extraordinary how often one is out of view. All that was gone into in the greatest detail.
You mentioned the loads. Can you recollect what weight of load each man would be able to carry?
I can't remember, but I think it was something not far short of 100 pounds.
And had you done mountain warfare training in India?
Personally, no. But there were one or two officers who had, And there, of course, their experience was invaluable. Well, I say invaluable. I'm not sure that, in fact, that there was much application. The terrain in Eritrea was really, I think, quite different than the Northwest Frontier. It really was. It was a problem all of its own. It was not. It was much more. I mean, I've talked to people afterwards, and they say that there is no comparison. It was infinitely worse. Although the mountains, of course, are much smaller, they are. They're more precipitous, and of course, there's much more. There was more scrub and that sort of thing on it. They were, and also they were. In many cases, they were covered in a sort of loose scree,